Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I am Sam Barrett. I am here. I am only here for, I guess, the next week or so, and then Sam's running away on vacation again. But we have Emor here.
Hello.
Hi, Em. How is it in Canada? Is it really cold?
Is freezing. Yep. I have like two pairs of socks on, and this is like fleece lined, but doing our best.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But yeah, well, I hopefully Canada thaws soon. Who the hell knows? We
Fingers
are
are crossed.
actually here with two special guests. So the first special guest is the Chris Barrett, which you've seen him on the Punk News podcast a couple times. Also my husband, also the bassist of Not Gorgeous. Hi, Chris.
I didn't realize I was a special guest.
Yeah, well, you're here now, so oh well. so hi. Are you excited for vacation, honey?
Of course. It's good to get out of town and do something different and get out of I think the joke here in New York is that it's like Canadian weather right now because it's usually considered cold in Canada or whatever, but yeah, it's been just as bad in New York, so we feel it.
Yes, my bedroom is really,
Yeah.
really, really cold right now. But anyways, second special guest is Chris Rana B9.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi. Well,
Yes.
thank you
Hi.
for coming on. This is great. I recently just did an interview with you, and I think it went over well. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you for doing that.
It's so we're gonna do like, a little chat here with Chris and then do some news stories afterwards. You guys could probably clearly see since there was no mention of a John G. John G has disappeared into the ether. I think the snow has encapsulated him. So hopefully he thaws soon in Philly and we'll see him next week, maybe? Maybe. I think so. But hi, Chris. So it seems to me that you j literally just put out a book. A book just
Yeah.
came out.
Just came out today.
Yes, Fenway Punks. It is literally, I haven't gotten my copy yet, but I definitely need to read this. And I just love this entire idea of, literally your life story collided with baseball in book
Yep.
form. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Thank you. So Fenway Punk is, it's about the kind of the genesis of both Bridge Nine and my clothing brand, Sully's. It covers the late 90s going into about 2004. So it's just a part of the story, but it's the foundation for both the label and for like everything else that's happened since then. So basically in a nutshell, it was friends of mine and I saw the opportunity to sell merchandise at Red Sox games to people leaving the stadium. We were mostly riffing on the rivalry with the Yankees between the Red Sox and the Yankees. There was a very strong rivalry, and Yankees suck was the slogan of the late 90s going into the 2000s. So we found a way to kind of capitalize on that. And for, most people don't realize a lot of the vendors outside of Fenway Park during that time in the early 2000s, they were all people in bands. They were all people from the Boston punk and hardcore scene, and they were selling the stuff. And a lot of it was being used to fund the Bridge Nine label.
That's amazing. Like, I love the fact that you took something that was, I guess, not necessarily punk, but made it like a passion project to fuel your punk project.
Yeah.
So pretty much right now you have Sully's and you have Bridge Nine, and essentially, I guess it collided into a brick and mortar right now.
Yeah, so we have a store about 35 minutes north of Boston. It's split right down the middle. One half is all records and mostly like kind of a hardcore punk record store, and the other side is Sully's, which is just a very Boston-centric clothing store.
Yeah, I think Chris and I actually went over to your warehouse like back in the day. I think when you were in Salem or something like
Yeah,
that.
either Salem or Peabody. Back
Yeah,
when
and
Brian,
I'm pretty sure it's Peabody.
was
Yeah.
that when Brian Schultz worked there?
Yes, it
Yes.
was. Nice.
Yes. And it was like literally a massive like warehouse that was the coolest thing ever.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we basically kind of replicated that. We have that kind of feel, but now with a record store in the front.
Yeah, and in store like in store appearances and stuff like that. Pretty much like we have something in New York called Rough Trade,
Yep.
that does like in stores. American Nightmare just played there.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and they just a few years ago played at our warehouse too.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're literally keeping the DIY ethos alive and somewhere, because I think like especially in New York, I was like, we have a lot of like venues disappearing, smaller venues, and essentially it seems like what you're doing is giving the small venue, I guess, feel in your store for things to happen if you want it.
Yeah, we basically wanted to have a be able to invite artists that we like and people that we've had a history with into our warehouse. Everything in our warehouse is on wheels, so we can just kind of part the seas and just kind of shift everything over. We have a drum riser in the back, and we just have we'll have a band play, and it's been pretty awesome. I mean, the first band we had back there was Newfound Glory, which was absolutely wild. And since then, we've had H2O, Cave-In, American Nightmare. We had Agnostic Front. And we've had 10 Yard Fight. We've had some pretty rad shows.
Yeah, so pretty much I guess like in regards to your record label, it seems like you have a very tight-knit community that you created for Bridge Nine. I was like, pretty much is that like a choice that you have to make? 'Cause I do know like, tons and tons of bands need a home, like a record label. So I guess how do you choose pick and choose like, who do you want to work with for the label?
Oh, so I mean, when I'm picking artists, it's a mix of, I mean, bands that I like. That's the first, I have to like whatever it is first. But a lot of times it's people that I've met, I've had some sort of connection with. Either they've toured with an artist I've worked with, or I mean, with a recent example, Heavy Hex is a band we signed in the last couple of years, and they actually just came into our store and gave me their demo. Which is pretty rare. I think out of, the 300 or so releases that Bridge Nine has had in the, last 30 years, I've signed maybe three bands because of an unsolicited demo. So it still can happen.
That's amazing. Heavy Hex is from Long Island, and Chris and I, we've actually seen them
Yep.
a couple
Nice.
times. Yeah, honey.
Yeah, we just recently saw him with Fiddlehead.
Oh, nice.
Was it Fiddlehead or was it Open City? It might have been Open City, sorry. It was with Open
Nice.
City, and then they played over the summer at I think Sands Brewing in Long Island. Great band, by the way. Great band. So I'm glad
Cool.
that
Thank
they
you.
managed to walk in and give a demo because it's a fantastic record.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so basically, like, we kind of have this. So one of the stories we're going to talk about later is Record Store Day, right? So as a person with a label, I was like, essentially, do you think that Record Store Day has anything to do with, I guess, this like bubble, that vinyl bubble or vinyl surgeons that has been happening in the last, I guess, 10 years?
I think Record Store Day definitely helps champion vinyl. I mean, it definitely gets people excited about vinyl. It is, really only like a twice a year kind of thing where you get that push. But it's definitely, I don't know. We have people that come into our store for Record Store Day, and we don't see them till the next one. So it is a different audience in a lot of ways. But it is something that helps push people into stores. And I mean, that we certainly appreciate.
Well, do you think that the vinyl bubble is done at this point?
I think, no, I think that right now it might be a little saturated. I think that there's more pressing plants than there has ever been. when I started pressing records 30 years ago, there was a handful of places that you could use, but there wasn't many. Now there's, quite a few more. Everything is being pressed on vinyl, so there is a saturation point, which is, kind of makes it more difficult, I think, for record stores and for fans, because there's just so much stuff out there. But I'd be curious. I feel like there's still some life to it.
Well, it might. It seems like it sometimes can be difficult for like an indie label like you guys, because I would have to classify you guys as a true indie label. It's not like you guys are being backed by, a major label like Sony or any of that. Clearly you guys came from literally selling Yankee Sucks t-shirts to being here. I would have to call you guys like one of the biggest, like, in our scene at least, hardcore label out there. Because you've literally been consistently churning out records for friends or bands that like we all love, that Punky's covers pretty regularly. Yeah, so it also seems like you guys have now collaborations or have had collaborations with like labels like Iodine and stuff like that. So how does like how did that come about? Like you working with Iodine?
So, I mean, Iodine is they're just an incredible label. Everyone that's involved with them, we've known outside of Iodine. I mean, I knew Casey back in the early 2000s. I remember, I think he booked like a $3 American Nightmare show in someone's basement. So, we've had a lot of history, and he's had the opportunity to put out a lot of great records. And Bridge Nine is an active label, but we're not putting out 20 records a year like we had in the past. It's not sustainable. No label can do it forever. So right now we're kind of picking and choosing and still releasing new music. But when we're not putting out a new album, having the opportunity to collaborate with a label like Iodine and do an exclusive variant or a special color of a record that they're doing is a very cool way for us to collaborate with them, have something that we can offer that's exclusive to our fans, and just kind of continue to participate.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I feel like I feel like a lot more labels these days are doing more collaborative work with other labels in order to push out like their favorite albums or their the next endeavors of whatever the label can do. Chris on like he has a record out last year and what was it, three labels put in?
We for my band Not Gorgeous, had to kind of reach out to a bunch of people and kind of sell a vision on like what a part-time band could do in order to kind of sell our record, and we managed to get three small labels involved in as well as help put it out ourselves, because we were going to put it out ourselves, but we wanted the reach of labels that already have pre-existing markets and maybe could get our music out beyond where we could play regionally for the time that we're doing it, and managed to get three labels to do that. But I also noticed that that's more of a trend now for like co-releases. You see some releases with three, four, five, six labels, and I guess that the only what I would ask to you then, Chris, is that so. For Bridge Nine right now, you guys are mostly just taking maybe exclusive variants or occasionally doing a collaboration. But do you see more labels, maybe your size, doing more split releases in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's for the same reason why we did so many split 7-inches, in the back in the day. It was an opportunity to kind of tap into two different audiences. Having an artist, or like we would work with, we'd do a split where we'd have an East Coast band and then we'd pair it with a West Coast band, and it would allow kind of both fan bases to kind of learn about the other. So I think that it's basically the same thing with doing variants and teaming up with other labels. It's just kind of pooling everyone's resources and audiences together.
And I guess if I could follow up with one more thing, I guess sort of going back to the whole record store day thing and all that. I don't know how much you feel like sharing Maybe your thoughts about this, but I feel personally, I feel like more on the consumer side, just record store day generally seems to like people. I think in my sphere, usually want to get more indie hardcore punk releases, and obviously we all have our guilty pleasures or music that we regularly listen to that we consider a major label or large bands that regularly like tour or whatever. I feel like though, if we're talking about like vinyl saturation, you have kind of bands that are maybe either hanging around or certain reissues, like a fourth, fifth, sixth reissue of an album with two different things, and then it kind of comes out. But for much larger bands that may not need it as much as smaller bands might. So how do you like what are your thoughts on like record store day for a smaller, more independent band who maybe had a chance to kind of push something out versus the larger represses that you regularly see kind of during record store day in record stores?
Well, I can tell you one thing that I know is kind of a con with record store day is it puts a lot of pressure on pressing plants during, all around the same time. And when I first started pressing records, I was the first plant that I ever used was United Record Pressing in Nashville, Tennessee. And I was told at the time, try and not release a record around the anniversary of Elvis's birth or his death. Basically that all the reissues for Elvis. His, in his catalog were happening around then. So, you'd get kind of like clogged and you'd have to wait much longer. That's kind of been what's happened with Record Store Day, where, if you have like a Taylor Swift or somebody else that's pressing a record and they're making, millions of copies, that will overtake, several, multiple pressing plants. So, what normally would have taken a couple months, now all of a sudden might take 4 or 5 months. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was to the point where it was taking almost a year for vinyl to get pressed from some plants. So we had plants that we worked with that were no longer taking new clients. They were only servicing our, labels they had a history with. So it got really difficult. I mean, I was 19 when I first ordered my first record. And, if you were 19 like 2 years ago, you couldn't press a record because it was, so clogged.
Yeah, 100%. And one last thing to that, I feel, although do you, with your experience now, maybe pressing, are you able? Is it now, how should I put it, beneficial, or is it, or something that maybe labels your size are looking at going back to maybe smaller plants that have popped up around the country and the world? I know there's a few like big heavy hitters that we could talk about, on end, but that, at least from my experience, for my band, the labels that helped me put it out, end up using a really small plant, and that, there's more, it seems to be more small plants that are available now that you kind of have to look for, but, maybe very inexperienced or things like that. So what are your experiences maybe, dealing with those type of plants?
Yeah, I mean, like smaller plants are sometimes more flexible with, doing cooler variants. They might do more, like less automated stuff. So if you want to do like special, I don't know, colors or, patterns, those are often, hand done, like kind of one at a time. And smaller plants might be more willing to do that. So that's great.
All right. I derailed this with a lot of vital talk now. I know Sam had another question prepped up for you.
Oh yeah. So I think this is the final question, and then, we'll conclude this segment. So if there is any record in the past, present, future, whatever, if that you want on the B9 catalog, what would it be?
Oh man, I would have said Bad Brains, but Trust Records beat me to it.
Yes.
Bad Brains are a favorite. Yeah, it's there's so many things, and I've been so fortunate to put out so many records that I really honestly never believed that I'd have the chance to do, especially as like a teenage hardcore kid. Like when I was, 17, I never in a million years would have thought that I'd be putting out records with bands like Agnostic Front. I mean, and there's a dozen bands like that that I've had the opportunity. I mean, I was an H2O fan, right as I was starting the label, and to kind of become their home and put out as many records with them as I have has just been absolutely amazing.
Yes. Well, we're gonna conclude this, but Chris Redman's gonna hang around, you guys. Chris, you have a book. People buy the book. The book is great, from what I can hear, because I hear rave reviews about it from
Thank
people.
you.
Yeah. So, do you want to end this with two songs? Your choice.
Let's just again, just because I played it earlier today, let's put on Carry On, A Life Less Plagued from their 2001 album. And then let's go out with Death Before Dishonor, Friends, Family, Forever.
Without knowing, my life is sinking down. And I don't dream my dream. Under a sky that I Chris is still with us. My Chris is still with us. Em is still with us. Hi, you guys. Okay, so let's start with some news. Green Day. Green Day just played the Super Bowl. Although I think we all thought that it was going to be the Super Bowl, right? But anyways, they played like a pre-show for the Super Bowl and played, was it three songs? No, four. Four Green Day songs. I know we've had extensive conversations here, me and Em and John, about Green Day playing the Super Bowl and our speculations about what political activism that they're gonna do on national TV. However, it doesn't look like most of that happened. Did you guys watch the Super Bowl? Did you see the clips about Green Day?
Yeah, no, I did. It's so fun story. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and one of her favorite bands right now is Green Day. So, I was excited to catch that and see how excited she was.
That's amazing. So basically they played Good Riddance, Time of Your Life, Holiday, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, and American Idiot. But they also performed a pre-party in San Francisco on the 6th of February, where Billy Joe kind of spoke out about ICE and stuff like that. And how this I guess American administration isn't the best here. So pretty much he did dedicate Holiday to Minneapolis and s change a couple lyrics to for modern current times of what we're living in right now. It seems like there has been mixed reviews, I guess, on the interwebs about this performance. Let me throw this to Chris. I mean, my husband, Chris. So, what are your thoughts
You could say
about?
Chris Baffert makes it easier.
Okay, fine, Chris Barrett. So, what are your thoughts of about this performance, hon?
Well, so funny thing is I missed it because I think for most people, because I wasn't paying attention heavily, and I would think a lot of other people would feel this way too. People heard that Green Day were going to play the Super Bowl, but didn't know when. So I wasn't aware that it was a pregame show, and I was around a party during a pregame show, and probably would have asked the person whose party I attended to put it on if I had known that it was on the pregame show. We were watching other things before the before Super Bowl, and I think more people probably missed it than would have caught it if I think I don't know. At least for me, it wasn't clear. I could be wrong, but then I do back to what Billy Joe maybe was talking about. While singing, there were videos circulating online, at least on Instagram, that there was a no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA chants going on. So I don't know if that made it to air or not. May probably not. I mean, Chris, did you happen to see the entire Green Day pregame show? Did you see him,
I
Billy Joe
did.
chant that?
I did. I didn't. I didn't see that. I didn't hear it.
Okay, so I'm assuming either it was like a sound check or they get on and whatever and they something, but it there definitely is video of that there, and but it didn't seem like that they spoke out more against, and I don't know if that was Mike maybe an NFL thing where they disclosed it where they would have withheld payment or something like that, whatever the terms and conditions were for their contract. I'm assuming that's what it would have been about, like what would have actually made it to air. So yeah, and I guess my only opinion about them making it to a halftime show is that I know that there were some other I guess the mixed emotions, well, not emotions, but I guess the mixed reviews about that would be, I think in some people's camp that it would be like, why, as a punk band like Green Day playing a Super Bowl, Super Bowl's not punk, and then others would be like, Green Day hasn't been punk for an extended amount of time, and then others would say, well, who's to stop whatever, who's to say no for an opportunity that you get, regardless of what you are, punk or not, when it comes along. And I guess I'd fall more along in that camp, in the sense that they've adapted and survived for an extended period of time when a lot of other bands in that era have gone away. They're still around, and this kind of is like something they have to do. And if, to get the opportunity to play whatever it is to whoever, Super Bowl or not, I think you got to take up on that opportunity. I don't think you can say no.
Yeah, I mean, it was in their backyard too. It was like
Yes, that's true.
right
Yeah.
there.
It wasn't at Gilman Street though.
Yeah.
Well, it would be a totally different story if it was out at Goldman Street. Billy Joe would have said whatever he wanted, right? I think we did discuss
Yes.
last week that there w definitely was contracts involved in this.
Yeah.
I think John did remember to mention the Janet Jackson scandal.
Yeah.
That led to an entire, like, probably, I think there was a fine involved in all that, which I was like, if you're getting money to be on TV, right? And it's not like Green Day necessarily, I don't think they need the money per se, but
I don't think they actually get paid. I think anyone that
no.
plays
Oh.
the yeah, at least the main like main performer like Bad Bunny didn't get paid.
Oh, right. I did read that
Yeah.
Bad Bunny had to
Right.
pay to go there. Well, even
Yeah.
if they don't get paid, I was like, I'm sure there was a contract that needed to be signed. And, I would have to assume that if a contract was signed and if there was a breach of contract, that they were definitely going to be fined if, let's just say, a couple words slip, right? Totally different if it was like, I guess someone in the background with a giant sign that said, like, F ICE or something. But I doubt that, like, they would have let that go, so I don't know. M, so what's your predictions about what Green Day was going to do, correct?
My predictions were wrong. Oh, well, they were kind of right at the pre-party, but that doesn't
Well,
count because that wasn't televised.
do you want to fill in the Chris's with your prediction?
Oh, yes. I thought that like Green Day were really gonna get very political with stuff and they were gonna kind of work in some things like, oh, guys, we're sound checking. Haha, we're doing American Idiot fun. And then when they like took the stage, they change the lyrics and they do different things in a live setting where it's like, haha, I can't do anything. Well, they can because they have the whatever 5 second delay, which was used because they swore and it was caught just like that. Also, a tactic that they used that I think was really interesting was they're playing The Time of Your Life was played when the like NFL VIPs or whoever they were like walking out. And then the
Oh,
last
you
song.
mean the retired players?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure why they were there, what was going on, but yep. Just like a nice little moment. And then at the end when the players came on the stage at the end of American Idiot, it was kind of like, oh, are they just going up there to be like, hey, don't get too political. These guys also have contracts and different things like that. Was it just kind of a measure? But yeah, and I think Sam, you mentioned like they could tape their guitars and like with stuff, like with Ice Out or whatever. So I was like watching for that too, and it was like, okay, everyone's pretty chill. So
Well, I felt like that could have happened. Like they could
yes.
have changed their appearance, they could have changed the clothes or something, like had a message on the clothes, like, not to bring back, like, the Grammys or anything, but some people did have Ice Out pins on them, like things like that. Also, I'm pretty sure Billy Joe is like he's notorious for like putting messages on his guitars. So this is like not something that, is necessarily new to him, like, oh no, I must have this pristine guitar. So yeah, like, I I think because there was definitely probably a contract there that they didn't want to mess with it. So, he said his 2 cents, at the pre-party, which I think is totally fine. I don't think that this is to John G's like caliber of what he expects, but it's definitely okay in my books, I don't say that they're not necessarily punk. I think Billy Joe still has punk ethos in him, even though Green Day itself, is a major band now, right? I do think that people can be still have like punk ethos, but still, have a band that everyone loves. Like, Chris, your daughter loves him a lot. Also Green Day is the type of band that, like, in order to be big, you need to have young fans. So you need to at least, like, and this is good, I think, as like a way of like, bringing up young punks, because we do need good punks to bring up young punks so that they're not bad punks. There's a lot of
Well,
bad punks sometimes.
you need that gateway. You
Yes,
know, you need
exactly.
that major kind of band that's, I mean, I'm sure there are people that kids that are seeing a band like Green Day and they're like, you know, it gets them in the door. And then where do they go from there? You know, like with my daughter, I mean, Green Day was an early like kind of big band for her, but she's already looking at what like local venues or like kind of smaller bands that are coming in, and she's kind of going down those rabbit holes, which is very exciting.
I think that's very exciting for like, hardcore punk parent to have kids that's into punk, because I think a lot of like our friends, at least, we're punk parent, like, we're not punk parents, but like our friends are punk parents, and all of their kids are like listening to trap or like other things, and we're just like, wow, where did this come from? TikTok?
Well, and with my daughter, it's even though I tried to expose her to things and show her things, I'm dad, so it didn't matter. You know, it's and whatever she was into and has been into, I celebrate and I'm excited for her. And it's been cool kind of seeing her kind of delve more into subculture stuff and more into punk stuff. And again, that was, you know, I wish I could take credit for it, but it's not. I mean, I don't even think she's ever really listened to much of the catalog that Bridge Nine has. It's mostly just things that she's been exposed to and just kind of like things that she finds on her own, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that, Chris, because I feel like, my bandmates have 2 kids, and then people I know that also have kids. I feel like it's been a mixed bag. Like sometimes they'll parents will share, everything related to that, and then some of the kids will embrace it and be all about it from day one, and there are other kids that are just like, "This is your thing. This is not my thing," and just totally not thinking either it's the lamest thing or it's not for me or whatever it is. So, I guess that's something as a parent, how do you, how do you feel about, whatever your like daughter's exploring, or just so much like what you hope that she finds?
I mean, it really is ultimately up to her. You know, I mean, and I had a younger sister that, you know, when I was in high school and college, and I was a teenager, I was trying to expose her to hardcore bands, and she just wasn't really having it. And then I remember coming home from college, and she was like really into some bands that I liked, and it was because of a friend, you know, because it wasn't her older brother. It was like somebody that she said that she knew that kind of said, "Hey, check this out," and she listened a little bit more closely than when I was trying to tell her. So, I mean, with my daughter, it's kind of a similar thing. It's, you know, I'm like, hey, I mean, I took her to see multiple bands. You know, from when she was maybe 5 on, you know, she's 14 now. And a lot of those things, she was there because she was with her dad, but it wasn't really what she was into, or she was just kind of like there. And now, you know, I've been able to take her to some shows, and I can tell that she, you know, even if she doesn't go home the next day to listen to that band, she has a different appreciation for the experience.
Right.
That's amazing. I love it. Now we just have to teach her how to sell merch
Yeah,
and
well, so
tables.
she actually is already ahead of the game. So she has her own store in Salem, Massachusetts. So she's 14. Last summer when she was 13, I helped her open a store, and it's dedicated to her artwork, and it really riffs on the Salem Halloween tourism. So we actually call, I joke and say her brand is kind of like Hello Kitty for goths. So it's very cute, like skulls and ghosts and pumpkins, but I'm gonna give her a shout. Like her website is georgiamadethis.com, and it's like just all really cute, like again, skulls and ghosts, and now she has a whole store dedicated to that brand.
That
That's
is
fantastic. Well,
literally Sam's
hey.
brand,
Check it
not
out.
Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
Hence why I end up in Japan all the
Nice.
time. Well, speaking of gothy, we have new music from Morrissey.
Oh boy.
So
Ooh.
we've had this ongoing conversation here on the Punk News Podcast about Morrissey, and for some strange reason, Morrissey is releasing more info, like more music. Is this off of that like weird LP that John was talking about? Makeup is a lie, yeah?
It is, yeah. Have you seen the album art for that?
Isn't it gothy?
The album art for the album is Morrissey standing there going like, ah, well, like there's a cross in the background and that's it.
Oh, great. Just like the poster for his tour. Okay, got it. Yeah, so basically, he just re released a digital single called Notre Dame, and it is, I think, lyrically very much about a church called Notre Dame, or at least a story about a church of Notre Dame. In my opinion, it is super, super gothy, and clearly there's a gargoyle in it, in the YouTube video of it. So yeah, do you guys listen to Morrissey?
I
I
mean,
do.
I'm
A
sorry,
little
go ahead,
bit.
Chris.
It's been a minute, but yeah, I mean, it's yeah. Not
Yeah.
so much recently, but
Okay.
for sure.
Yeah, it's like,
Yeah.
so pretty much he's putting out a new album. We're not even sure where this catalog came from. He keeps on booking shows and then canceling shows. We're not exactly sure what's happening with Morrissey. But I think like every single time he releases stuff, either news or a single, we're all a little shocked about this happening, right, Em?
It's like, is he still going? Is this still happening? Yeah.
Yeah, so
I guess since there's no John, I'll be the I'll do lukewarm take. I don't have the hot takes like John does, but some people I don't know, have an ego so big, and some people just like the attention. And it when someone has a pattern of unpopular statements and opinions, and kind of like, you know, fights with others about it, and or especially the whole booking the tours. I mean, he's notorious for that. Booking tours and shows and canceling it for whatever reason, health, depression, something, whatever it is that consistently comes up. It kind of, it doesn't matter. I guess it's one of those like, no press, any press. There's no bad press if there's any press or whatever the statement is. I forget the statement, but it's just like, as long as he's still being mentioned, he's still relevant. And it feels like it's almost like it doesn't matter what he does, no matter how many tours he cancels, how many weird album covers he puts out, whatever he's doing artistically and releasing it. It's more just to keep going. And as long as, like, I don't think anybody could, the only person who could ever tell Morrissey to stop is Morrissey. You know, that he just decides on his own, like, yeah, this is not my thing. I don't need this anymore. But as long as, you know, and even the videos of him, like, taking a shirt off at like throwing it at the audience and whatever, clearly with like Granddad bod and whatever. And it's not shaming Granddad bods, but it's more of like everything is kind of like, it almost feels like it has almost like a Howard Stern kind of feel with everything happening around that. That it's there has to be some type of story to the story. It can't just be him releasing an album and doing a tour. There has to be drama associated with it. So if there's drama, he's on the Punk News Podcast.
well, that's it. I mean, look, we're talking about him. You know,
Exactly.
and people have been talking about him for a long time.
Yeah. So there you
Well, we're
go.
gonna continue to
It's
talk
working.
about him. And well, to that, I was like, literally just look at the album art and look at the last poster. I think it was the European poster that they put out. Like, it's literally really weird. And we even dissected it on even an artistic point about how weird it was. So,
Yes.
yeah. Morsi, you're gonna continue to Morsi, so hopefully people actually see you in real life. Maybe.
Do we hope? Do we? I mean, I'm not saying pro or con. I just do we hope? I don't know.
Well, honey, he is playing Europe when we're in Europe.
That's an easy pass for me.
Apparently it's sold out, but
Still an easy pass.
when in Rome.
Chris, let me know what some good B&I bands are coming through Europe. Then,
I will circle back to you.
all right, thank you.
You mean this week, yeah.
Yeah, only this week, pretty much. But go on.
Yeah, well, Morsi, he'll always get some airtime on the Punk News podcast for some reason. I honestly think it has something to do with odd posters and weird album art.
And that French accent.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
is not good. That is really
Yeah.
bad.
Yeah. Well, I'm not necessarily a fan of him, but I do see the allure in him these days. Okay, so we're gonna pivot. So record store day. Yes, we mentioned it before, but the actual list for April 18th came out recently. It is seemingly a very exhaustive list of things. Hold on, let me see. Yeah, I think there was a couple of items that I definitely wanted, I know. Yeah, so did you guys take a look at the record store day list?
So I haven't even looked at it yet. I know we printed it out at our store. We've had two people that have been going through it. I haven't had a chance to yet, so I can't comment.
Okay, got it. Well, there is a fair amount of Ramones reissues and Bad Brain live albums that's coming up out of this. But I do know that I historically have been going to Record Store Day with Chris and camped out in front of places for a while. We've actually taken a pause in this because we're old and would rather sleep. Because why wait in line for 17 million hours just to find it online later, right? Hence that. But I do think that this year I'm probably gonna have to drag Chris out of bed and feed him coffee to in order to get a couple things. My list includes not the Hello Kitty handmade vinyl figure.
Sure.
I did see that, and I think everyone in my little circle sent me that, saying, "Oh, you're getting a line this year, right?" And I was said, "No, I think there's only 1,000 made." However,
On. We have a perfect opportunity here, not to cut you off. Chris, did you happen to have that on your order sheet for it to come into the merchandise store, the Hello Kitty figurine?
so I honestly don't even know, but we'll see. I do have to say that so my daughter's store is totally separate. It's one town over from Bridge Nine. And we do, it's not Hello Kitty, but we say it's like Hello Kitty for goths.
Well, she hey, if a Hello Kitty vinyl figurine ends up in her store, then she definitely must make it look gothy. Yes. But I did notice a lot of major label stuff on this. It was kind of insane when I went through the list and looked at it. The two things, actually, maybe three things I want from the list is all major label stuff. I do remember back in the day when I used to camp out in front of Generation Records to go get my stuff. Because, it's like a fix for us here at the Barrett household. Yeah, like there was a lot more like indie stuff put in. Like I used to see Red Scare stuff. I used to see, yeah, pretty like B9. Yeah, there was like B9 stuff on the list before, things like that. I was like, pretty much this entire label is majors, and yeah, I'm looking for the Carly Rae Jepsen 7-inch and the Wisp album. Yeah, those
Yeah,
are.
the other thing too is that you used to see more, and I have the list up right now and I'm looking at it. And there are some bands that, you know, that we consider like punk and hardcore and whatever. And then there's, you know, obviously major label acts, but it's been that way for some time, but it's consistently runs now where maybe if you would see a run that had like 5,000, that'd be the top number. And then, you know, that would be like, whoa, that's the big one. And you would see a lot of like 300 to 500, maybe under 1,000, and then it was always like a mystery as to like what independent store got what. But it seems like now that a lot of these numbers are, you know, this Jeff Buck, there's a Jeff Buckley release at like over 15,000. You know, there's a few at like, you know, 4,500, 7,800. It's just so much more. I think part of the fun in it was like seeing what your store got, and I at least I'm seeing smaller independent stores participating less in it because they the cost is prohibitive to get some of these records that the wholesale or whatever to buy from the distributor is going to be high, and then when it's high and they have to then resell it, they're selling it for an exorbitant amount. People don't want to pay it, and then it kind of sits, and I think that's really squeezed out smaller bands and labels from participating. And now you're kind of getting, I think, a lot more live, a lot more B-sides, a lot more anniversary pressings, whereas you would even get back in the day, you'd get some bands releasing their a record for first time on vinyl. I remember famously like at least in the punk news circle was Menzinger's Chamberlain Waits was one of those. Where it was supposed to be, you know, a record store thing, and then it turned into whatever, but whatever. It's, I mean, that's fine. It got people interested in getting those records. And I think part of it now is just more the fact that, you know, I've even succumbed to it where I've bought like four different live Ramones shows albums, and I love the Ramones, but at the same time, it's like, do I need another session of them playing at a different club? And, you know, do we need B-sides? Do we need this? And it's kind of, I don't know what the answer would be to get maybe someone like me more excited for it. I feel like over the past few years, it comes out and I'm just like, sure, that's fine,
You're
you know.
just
And I'm even
jaded.
see, yeah, and I'm also seeing actually a good example is I'm looking right now. The Cure, love The Cure, Greatest Hits, excellent Greatest Hits collection. It has already been released on Record Store Day, and here we are in 2026. Being re-released on Record Store Day, and it's saying
We
RSD
have a
exclusive.
copy.
Yeah, we have a. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess as a record store owner, Chris, like how would that, like how do you feel about Record Store Day now versus how it was maybe like 10 years ago?
So with Record Store Day, it is a commitment financially, right? You have to stock a lot of different stuff. We are a hardcore punk record store, but we're also on like a main street in a coastal city. So we have all sorts of random people that come in that don't know anything about Bridge Nine, and they just see that there's a record store. And when we first opened originally, it was almost all hardcore and punk. And over the last few years, we've realized that the customers that come in, you know, it's so much more than that, you know, right? So we carry a little bit of other things to kind of have something available. So when Record Store Day, you know, comes out, we do kind of go into all these random records that some do sit, some of them fly out. It's really a crapshoot. But we try not to overextend ourselves. So, you know, we'll buy what we think we can work with, and then, you know, hope that we have some, you know, a little bit of something for most of the people that come in.
Yeah, it's just it's and I mean, like you said, that commitment. I feel like that's generally what a lot of record stores have been saying is just, you know, if you have a larger store, maybe a chain, I'll just throw out a name like something like Zia or Bull Moose, Bull Moose Regional to New England and stuff. I'm not saying that they have an infinite amount of money. I mean, I don't think any business necessarily has an infinite amount of money, but might have more flexibility and be able to withstand. But a smaller shop has to pick and choose and be kind of judicious about what should be available. And I think for those who have followed and participated, I guess me as consumer, not a seller, kind of look at it now, and it's like, since there's less excitement, you're going to get more of the casual. The only thing is that I think people, myself, is worried about when a casual stops, then how do we go back to supporting the independent record store that wants to, continue? And I think, I mean, the answer is always to continuously go. If you're it's a new town or something like that, go check out your record store, go support your local record store. I mean, that should always happen. But do you find that the bump is what it was before, potentially, with record store day? Is it always still a bump?
So, I mean, our experience has been pretty. I mean, we've only been participating with Record Store Day for now about, I think this is our fourth year.
Okay.
So, and we're not one of the shops that like gets the crazy line. We'll get our handful of regulars and we'll have like a handful of people that live in the area that'll come out right at, right when we open. But so our experience has been something that we're continuing to kind of learn and kind of like see how it goes. But it is, when we buy all our records, like for a record store day, our store and a lot of stores basically just breaks even on that first day or that first weekend. And then you kind of hope that you sell some of this other stuff that you have. And a lot of the people that do come in aren't necessarily regulars. You'll get these kind of random people that are just hunting records, and then you might not see them again for 6 months. Obviously, we want to do things that help kind of reward our regular customers and like, create the community that we want to have, where we want people coming in and being like being the spot. So like, it's Record Store Day doesn't do that for us, but it does get people in the door that might not have ever come in otherwise.
Are you personally, is Bridge and I considering this year? And maybe I might have missed an email or something like that. Is there something exclusive for your label for Record Store Day that would entice somebody to come in or order online to support your store?
So we're not doing anything through Record Store Day like as Bridge Nine this year, but we are hosting a I mean, we obviously will be carrying Record Store Day releases in our record store. And then we're also hosting a like an a small makers kind of artist market in our warehouse on Record Store Day. So hopefully we'll have people coming in for the market, check out the records, people coming to check out the records, check out the market, try and kind of cross-pollinate.
Oh, that, see, I like that. I like that. Bringing in more of like a local business flair to it, and not just limiting it to that. So, one joke that we Sam and I had, being online waiting for Record Store Day in the past, when we used to wait outside Generation, there was always a casual person walking by, usually older, and asking, "What are you online for?" And I would hope that if you had a line for your store, and then you have an artist market as well. Now, Sam would always joke that we're waiting for the next Apple product. And
Right.
some of the older people would like chuckle and be like, "All right, you got me there." And then other people would like seriously get upset, like, "Why didn't you answer my question?" So I'm hoping that there'd be some witty response to the whole market that you have going on outside your store.
We've got a couple months, so I'll work on something.
It's something to look forward to. So best of luck, by the way.
Thank you.
Or just put a flyer in front of your store that says the latest iPhone out now, out today.
He runs a real store. There's a real responsibility with that. I mean,
That's true.
you don't want to end up in the paper for the wrong reason, unless you
Well,
go with no
I
pet.
mean, you said no press is bad press, right?
Yeah,
So
that's like, unless it's just like you're just looking to get the name out there. It might not be the worst idea. Maybe, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, maybe I'll change my spiel instead of Apple product to like bagels. New York bagels. We're getting bagels at 10 a.m. at a record store.
As long as they're not wearing Yankees hats while making it, we're okay. So, Mets fans, Red Sox fans, we can come together. The
Nice.
Yankee sucks.
I can tell you the loudest Yankee suck chant I have ever heard was at a Red Sox Mets game at Fenway Park. It was incredible.
Wait, what year was that, if you don't mind me
This
asking?
was, I think it was 2019.
20, we Sam and I were there. We were at
Amazing.
that game.
Nice.
We were
Nice.
at that game, and we were with the Seven Line Army, and
Oh, very
so
cool. Yeah.
yeah, the way kind of like soccer, like or hardcore Japanese baseball thing or whatever.
Yep.
And I mean, it was fantastic. And I mean, throughout the game, I think both fans were ribbing each other lightly. It's not quite a rivalry. I mean, we don't face each other that often. But when that broke out, all the handshakes just came out between
Oh, yeah.
everybody. It was almost like a Catholic mass where you're supposed to give peace and shake everybody's hand. That was the moment where we had it. Beers
So
are passed,
I can tell you that. So at that particular game, I was, and this is something that it's never happened before. I was in just the right place at the right time, and somebody asked me to go with them, but I was in the owner's box during that chant,
Oh,
during those
okay.
chants. So it was like, with the Red Sox ownership, they didn't realize who I was, so it was safe. But I mean, being in there and hearing that chant, it was unifying.
Yeah, we'll always have that unity, for
Yeah.
sure.
Well, it was just an experience to be in someone else's territory but still feel at home.
Yep.
Plus, we literally looked like we were invading, because every single time we go anywhere with the Seven Line, every like local person, whoever it may be at the ballpark, would like look at us and go, "What is this?" Because we're all wearing the same shirts, we're all like, whatever,
Yep.
being weird together, sitting together, like, experiencing this together, like as a mass.
Yeah.
Maybe we're minions, I don't know. We just don't wear yellow, right? But yeah, no, it is magical. The Seven Line is magical as a baseball fan.
Oh, it's incredible. And I mean, that guy Darren, right? That's does the
Yes.
seven line. I mean, he's a hardcore fan. I used to talk to him back in like 2011 when he was first getting started, and what he's done is absolutely incredible.
It's
In
bonkers.
terms of starting a fan brand and then taking it all the way, it's incredible.
The owners of the Sox came down to where we were at the Seven Line just to meet Darren when
Oh,
we
that's
were
cool.
there. Like, they shook hands, there
Yeah.
was pictures, all of that, and we were
That's
all like,
awesome.
"What's going on?"
I'm very sure it was actually John Henry that came down
Yeah,
to
that's
shake some
incredible.
hands. Yeah.
That's incredible. And I was in his
And
box, which is wild.
yeah. No, it seemed like a good time. And actually, yeah, it's like a fun traveling away fan thing. And not to leave M out of this, M, I don't, I'm just, assuming not a baseball fan, but M could get on it because since she's in Ontario, Toronto also hates the Yankees.
Hell
So
yeah.
we could take
Em,
that.
we are trying to get to a Toronto's game with the
Yes, come
Mets.
up.
Yes, we just, have to figure out when this may be and cross a border.
Yeah, whether our adult priorities will allow us to go. It's like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday game, and it's an odd time of year. So if we make it work, we'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know. It's a good stadium for it. It's really nice.
Oh, I
Bring
want that
sunscreen,
hotel room.
though.
I want that hotel room so bad.
Oh,
My God, yeah.
something
It's so
to look forward
expensive.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, rightfully so.
If anyone knows anything about the stadium where the Blue Jays play, there is a hotel in the stadium, and you could literally book a room there just to watch the game from your hotel room balcony.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty cool experience.
It is amazing. But yeah,
So cool.
there's a lot of baseballing happening here, and it's great.
That's the theme of the night. It's records of baseball, so we're continuing on with the theme.
Records baseball, and apparently the Ramones now, because yes, the
Yes.
Ramones is putting something out on Record Store Day. That is a real thing. But apparently there has been litigation recently about I guess ownership of the Ramones, what is this,
Catalog.
intellectual property?
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently this has been decades long. This is between Linda Ramone, which is Johnny's widow, and Mikey Lee, which is Joey's brother. Apparently what it has boiled down to was, I think, Mikey sold his 50% half share of the intellectual property to Linda. So now Linda owns it all. I cannot believe that this has taken this long to do, but it seems like there was years and years and years of probably suing each other for various reasons, including Mikey suing Linda for Linda's use of the name Linda Ramone, which I think is a little crazy because even like her husband is known as a Ramone. I guess she could use the pseudo name as Ramon, but I guess there is definitely like legalities to just the trademark of Ramon in this, right? So do you guys think this is crazy that this has taken this long to settle out?
I personally don't, only because like one of the things we were talking about before, like Morrissey or Green Day, some musical artists transcend generations, and Ramones is one of them. So if I mean, I think any back catalog that there's a point in contention, there's kind of a reason for it. And I think Ramones, correct, I mean, people could correct me if I'm wrong, over time, like, I fully got into Ramones after Joey died because I was a teenager when that happened. So, and I think there's a
Wait, also,
more of
they
it.
are like the quintessential New York punk band.
Well, yeah, and it's just like it's like one of those legacy acts that continues to get new fans. So if it's a legacy act that continues to get new fans, like if you're talking about like a monetary thing associated with it, then you're gonna want to have control of that back catalog because you're going to keep selling something, whether, and if it's not just a back catalog, I shouldn't even just say back catalog, because I'm looking at the article, it's the intellectual property. So that, to my best knowledge, would that include merchandising as well? That's why, which John was, because I mean, I'm assuming it includes merchandise. So assuming it does, I mean the casual people buy Ramones merch, maybe not even potentially listen to the Ramones, and also the use of the name there, it's kind of, there's something associated with it. So something that where there are multiple, kind of hands involved, it doesn't surprise me now to take this long, because people usually want to hold out for their highest possible valuation to get a return on. So this is Mickey Lee, obviously wants to get, if he has any stake in it, wants to get the highest valuation that he can, and where you think you are at your peak. And I'm assuming that that just happened recently with that. So now's the time. I mean, I can only imagine how long, I don't see in this article how long they've been battling it out. For this particular court filing, I see it started in 2023. So you're talking about almost 3 years. I mean, with how courts run and the stakes involved in it doesn't surprise me that it took that long.
Well,
It really doesn't.
I think it was even before 2023. The 2023 was pretty much Linda filing a lawsuit
N the most recent one, right?
for a film that was supposed to
Okay.
star Pete Davidson.
Oh, there, that, yeah. So, I mean, again, intellectual property, like, who controls this? Who controls that associated with that? It's, yeah, I mean, it's, I still could see something even popping up again in the future, relating to that, whether it's Mihaly himself or somebody. I mean, it nothing would surprise me related to this.
Well, also starting a band, when you're like, kids starting a band, you're just starting a band, right? I don't think anyone's thinking about like the legal rights of said band when you're starting a band. So like I think everything is like a gray area sometimes, until like someone goes, okay, we have to file for this, that, and a third, like trademarks or copyrights or whatever, right? On music, in order to like own it, right? So it's kind of like to me, it's just crazy. I'm like, it's just crazy. I don't know. I would have to say, like, whoever is in charge of like making sure that these reprises for Market Store Day is happening is pr doing a pretty good job because they do sound pretty good. says half of, well, a lot of. It's a bunch of the Ramones collection that's in my possession right now, or
I mean,
Chris's.
I haven't bought all of them, but I think I've impulse bought more than my fair share of various concerts somewhere. And I usually go back to the It's a Live one anyway, because that one's a classic.
There
But
also has been a lot of impulse buying of it overseas.
yeah, well, I mean, to the point that I was making with Chris before, you go somewhere, you want to support a local record store, so maybe it might be in a foreign country, and you might want to go hunting to see something there that, you might not find at your local record store or like, nearby you. So helps them, helps you, all these Ramones represses, I mean, helps the back catalog at whoever owns it. So, I mean, there'll still be people kind of buying it. So, yeah, like, it goes back to my point that I'm not surprised that with something that there's a lot at stake with it, it doesn't surprise me that it took this long to kind of duke it out.
I also love the way the court filing is worded because it's Miss Ramone, Miss Ramone, Miss Ramone, and just like, oh, you had a problem with her using the name or not anymore.
Yeah.
You
Well,
know,
yeah,
it's
I
officially
love
hers
that.
now.
Yep.
There we go.
But
He's so good.
now buying all the represses, Miss Ramone will own it all.
Exactly.
I mean, no one is necessarily getting younger associated with that as well. I mean, that first record came out like 50 years ago now, right? So, I mean, even if you were at the tail end associated with it, you're pushing 60 at this point, so more of life has passed for that. So whoever could get something from it, but I mean, that legacy will continue to live on though. I
Oh yeah,
mean,
they're probably waiting for the hologram tour.
yeah, exactly. I mean, and then let's see that, and that goes back to my point. Who's going to get the rights to the hologram or AI or whatever related to that? So, I mean, we don't know. So,
It's gonna be Linda now, right?
For the time being, yeah. So, how long? Yeah,
Well,
she could enjoy it for it. She could enjoy it for the time.
also, which iteration of the Ramones? Because there has been a couple members that has come and gone.
But the members that came in were the supporting cast over time. I mean, if you look at the history, they all just kind of cycled in. It was mostly drummers too that really cycled in more than
Yes.
anything. That sounds like a typical punk hardcore band. It's mostly drummers that cycle in. It's always the drummer that comes and goes.
So I remember with American Nightmare, I want to say they had 20 drummers,
Yep.
in the first 2 years.
If you go through, and I do like when Wikipedia has the if the band's big enough, they have the chart of the members, and you see the lines of vocals, guitar, bass. More times than not, when you get to drums, there's about 6 to 12 names, and the lines are very small, and then just hopping around. And then some of the drummers leave and then come back and then leave again. Those are my favorite when the drummer's done like two or three stints for a variety of reasons. So, yeah, that's something that's definitely a thing.
Hey, if you're a drummer for hire,
You'll always have a job.
you're good. Yes,
You will
yes,
always have a job.
yes.
Guitarist, dime a dozen, bassist, who cares? Drums, gold standard. And I'll say this as a bassist, who cares?
Oh boy. Well, I think we're gonna conclude this, eh? I'm tired. Em, are you tired?
I could sleep.
Yeah, sleeping is nice. Especially since you're living in an Arctic tundra and your cats are probably like frozen in a
Yeah.
little ball. Yep,
I need to go like cuddle with them and just blanket fort. Yeah, get them unfrozen.
yes. And the Chris's. I love the fact that there is two Chris's here because I'm just confusing everyone with Chris and Chris. I'm just like, hi, Chris's.
Oh, to
What
sign
made
off on one sports thing though, Chris, sorry about the Patriots.
Oh, you know what? That was rough, but what are you gonna do,
I am a Jets fan, so I'm actually not sad, but I will say they had a very good team and had a very good season. So
Well, that's the thing. And
that's it here.
Nobody saw the season happening the way it did. So, it sucks to lose at the end, but at least they got that far.
Well, the good thing is all the other DVD documentaries about the championships, they're in HD and not before the man landed on the moon. That's all I'll say about that.